Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we mentioned, the Cuomo administration reportedly made clear to the owners of the Indian Point nuclear power plant this week that he intends to shut it down. One of the big issues regarding Indian Point is the ability to evacuate in the event of an emergency in an area that is so much more densely populated than when the plant first went up decades ago, and we'll have some numbers in just a minute. As it happens, the Associated Press is just completing a large-scale investigation of the nuclear industry nationwide in light of Fukushima in Japan, including the evacuation challenge. Indian Point provides 25% of the electricity to New York City and Westchester, so any decision to shut it down will not be taken lightly. Jeff Don is national investigative reporter for the Associated Press and joins me now. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on WNYC.
You're welcome. Good morning.
Your report raises the concern that many nuclear evacuation plans, including around Indian Point, may be outdated. Why do you use the word outdated?
Well, because the plans were supposed to be kept up to date, and part of what that means is that planners were supposed to keep track of population changes, growth within 10 miles of the nuclear plants, and also within 50 miles, where there's some planning as well that goes on in advance of a possible nuclear accident. And they were supposed to keep the plans up to date as the infrastructure changed, as you got more buildings, as you got more people into an area. They were supposed to make sure that people could be notified on a timely basis. People could be evacuated if necessary on a timely basis. That was how it was supposed to work, and it really hasn't worked that way.
And certainly getting out of the 10-mile radius around Indian Point in Buchanan means going through a lot more densely populated areas than when this was originally built. But let's talk about 10 versus 50, because you note that evacuating a 50-mile radius around Indian Point would mean relocating 17 million people. Does that include all of New York City?
It includes just about all of New York City, except a little snippet of Staten Island, at the southern part of Staten Island. And what's interesting, I think, is that nobody really took that idea so seriously before the accident in Japan at Fukushima Daiichi. But what happened in Japan is that they had this accident where there was a radiation leak over days, and the Japanese government said that we'll evacuate our population out to 12 miles, but the U.S. government, in giving advice to its citizens in Japan, said we don't think you should be any closer than 50 miles to that plant. And the planning in the United States that's done, the advanced planning for evacuation, is only out to 10 miles from our American plants. Within 50 miles, the states plan to ban contaminated food and drink, like they had to temporarily give guidance on not to drink the water in Tokyo for several days if you were feeding it to toddlers, that kind of thing. But beyond 10 miles, United States plants and communities do not plan for evacuation, and yet here in the Japanese accident, the U.S. government was in the position of saying, we don't think you ought to go any closer than 50 miles. So what I'm saying is that since then, people have been taking that much more seriously.
Yeah.
And we talked to the emergency preparedness people in New York City, and one of them said, when we asked about the possibility of an evacuation taking in New York City, he said, never in the history of mankind has anybody tried to move that many people in that amount of time, when we asked them how practical it would be.
And the governor says not practical at all. He wants Indian Point closed. And you write in your article about evacuation drills that don't include actually moving people or taking into account different possible scenarios based on different emergency conditions. Was that specific to Indian Point in part as well?
It generally is. That's right. Generally, what the drills do is that they send the people who give the commands to their command posts. Sometimes every other year, they'll send some of the first responders out to their posts, but they virtually never anywhere in the country run a drill where they send all the police out to the corners where they're supposed to be directing traffic, and they virtually never actually enlist any number of ordinary people to see how well the evacuation would go. Now, that may sound over the top to some people, but they actually do some of that in Japan.
What do the plant owners say about that?
Well, they say that the plants are very, very safe, that there's a very low likelihood of accidents, and they say that it's very unlikely that you'd get an accident where you have to move everybody at once. And if you talk to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the federal people who regulate the plants, and to FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, that are also involved in emergency preparedness at the plants, they say, you couldn't imagine very well the need to evacuate beyond 10 miles. It just isn't something that we foresee.
My guest is Jeff Down, National Investigative Correspondent for the Associated Press, just completing a series on the nuclear industry in New York, which happens to conclude just as Governor Cuomo, through a staffer, reaffirmed, according to the New York Times, to the Entergy Corporation, which owns the Indian Point nuclear power plant, that he intends to shut down Indian Point, which, you know, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Washington technically oversees these things, but the state also has to issue certain permits having to do with water and so forth. That you agree, Jeff, does give the governor the actual power to shut this down?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not sure how that would be argued in court. I know that in Vermont, where the legislature has even more say, ostensibly than in New York, the plant owner at Vermont Yankee is challenging such a vote against relicensing by the Vermont legislature. So I think there are definite legal questions that are raised.
Now, in New Jersey, let me give a little background here. Another piece in the series had to do with longer lives for nuclear power plants than they were originally intended for, and that the NRC is relicensing plants to keep going for longer than, you know, people said at the beginning that they were supposed to be in use for. And we have some news from New Jersey this week. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission said yesterday that it is renewing the operating license for the Salem Units 1 and 2 at the Hope Creek Salem Nuclear Power Plant in New Jersey for an additional 20 years. That's to 2036 and 2040, respectively. And coincidentally or not, Salem 2 in southern Jersey is shut down, or was shut down earlier in the week. I'm not sure if that's still going on because of a problem with a reactor coolant pump. Are you familiar with Salem in particular, and you want to put in context for us a little bit this issue of the longer than originally expected lives of these plants?
Sure. When nuclear plants were first built in the 1960s and 1970s, everybody assumed that they would be replaced in 25 or 30 years. They were given 40-year licenses, and what the industry and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission say is, well, that was kind of an arbitrary number, 40 years. We thought that maybe they could last longer, but that was kind of the time that it took to amortize the investment for the companies to get their money back, and it was really an economic decision. Well, in our series, for our series, we interviewed people who were actually involved in designing nuclear power plants, and we looked back into those years at the documentation that was provided to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and what we found is that the plants not just were given 40 years as an arbitrary thing on the licenses, but that many of the parts and the systems were designed to last 40 years, and that doesn't mean that they're gonna everything's gonna fall apart on the 40th year plus one day, but they're really designed to last that long, and you can replace a lot of parts, and a lot of parts are replaced. But there are certain things like the giant vessels, the giant tanks that the steel tanks that the nuclear fuel is enclosed in, and the concrete buildings that provide a so-called containment, a barrier against radiation. Those kinds of things really so far can't be replaced. And the problem with the things that can be replaced is that some of that can't be seen to maintain it, and there are always judgment calls involved. And the NRC in our series we showed has a history of delaying inspections to times when the plant will be closed for refueling, and then we cite instances where you've had at that point an accident while at a time when inspection was being delayed.
Did you report on Hope Creek Salem at all? Is this NRC extension of the license for another 22 years surprising to you in light of your reporting?
It's not surprising, and the main reason that it's not surprising to us is that the NRC has never said no to a license extension. It's now extended about 70 of the 104 licenses of U.S. commercial power reactors, and it's never once said no. So a lot of independent engineers, a lot of safety watchdog groups, and these are not just people who oppose nuclear power, but a lot of those groups say that the relicensing program, really, though it's very elaborate, they spend a lot of money on it, they go through a lot of steps and jump through a lot of hoops. A lot of these groups say that really relicensing amounts to an elaborate rubber stamp.
Indian Point provides 25% of the electricity to New York City and Westchester. So what happens if it is shut down?
Well, that's the problem, and that's what's driving the industry and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and FEMA to make these kinds of decisions and to relax these kinds of standards. We actually saw explicitly some NRC documentation saying we gotta keep the plants going because there's this economic incentive to do it. I mean, if they said that we have to evacuate everyone, be able to evacuate everyone quickly, then they might have to shut some plants down. So they don't want to do that. And what you've seen in recent years is that the NRC is talking increasingly about so-called sheltering in place, even though on the one hand, it says, you know what, if you can evacuate quickly, it's always better to evacuate. On the other hand, it's relying more and more on this idea of if there is an accident, we'll just tell people to stay in their homes, to stay in their businesses. They get some protection from radiation that way, and then we'll move them as quickly as we can. So all these things we saw in our series and in the research that we did and the interviews that we did, all these things are motivated by this economic, perceived economic need to keep the plants running. Of course, the flip argument that lots of independent nuclear engineers make is that, my goodness, and these are people who favor nuclear power, my goodness, one bad accident here, and that really could do terrible, terrible damage to the industry like we've seen in Japan. And so these things need to be extraordinarily safe.
I know your reporting is on nuclear, and we just have 15 seconds left, but this fracking for natural gas that the governor approved yesterday does or continue toward approval, does that replace the electricity, or can't we look at that as a trade? Literally 15 seconds.
I don't know about fracking and how much we can get from it, but I certainly know that there's going to be a need. Everybody agrees for quite a bit more electricity in coming years, and it's not clear that it has to be nuclear or it has to be some other.
And we leave it there.
They need it.
With AP investigative reporter Jeff Don, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.